Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 45, The Path of the Teacher, Part 4. So now we will leave the murky veil of despond and move up towards the relationship that we have to our own ego. And here we're really going to speak a little bit about the spiritual life of the teacher. And we'll see how, you know, working with this out of Rudolf Steiner's impulses and methods just removes you completely from all of those entanglements and difficulties and conflicts and everything. And you're just, in a way, you know, blissed out. Who cares? Isn't that great? Unfortunately, however, Rudolf Steiner's path of self-development and unfolding isn't quite as joyful, at least not in its basic steps, as what you might see in your favorite New Age magazine or emblazoned on posters down the street in San Francisco. Not that there's anything wrong with those posters, and I love San Francisco, but Steiner's path is different, and I am going to avoid sort of saying, well, do this meditation and say this four times a day, and, you know, that will really help you. It's huge. You know, Steiner gave all kinds of exercises, subsidiary exercises, preparatory exercises, contemplative work, meditative work, thinking work in the philosophy of freedom, which he said, do that and you don't need to do the other things, essentially. So I'm not going to, you know, try to give you, much as I'm tempted to, yet another shopping list or laundry list, but rather just talk a little bit about Steiner's path. And as you know, I certainly make, you know, no secret that in these conferences that I'm going to be bringing a lot of anthroposophical connections. You know, I'm not just giving you do this on Monday, Tuesday, but rather this is why, that the why, and the why always comes down in the end to child development, the fourfold human being, and all of that is not stuff that I made up and I figured out. It's all from Rudolf Steiner. And it's all difficult, and it's complicated, and you know, at times you just forget you're supposed to be acting out of that, and you say something to the children or do something that you learned yourself way back when in some mainstream school. It's not that you can be incredibly consistent with this, but I would just say that Waldorf education is difficult. In and of itself, it's not going to always be satisfying. It's not always going to be a lot of fun. There'll be disappointments. There'll be errors. There'll be surprises, betrayals, you name it. But the path of self-development, the teacher's path that Rudolf Steiner gave, or what one makes as one's path out of Steiner's work, this fits Waldorf education like a glove fits a hand. Or maybe I should say it is the hand that's in the glove that is Waldorf education. You know, that this is something that no one else offers, no other educational methodology offers. It's not like John Dewey gave teachers a whole set of exercises which would strengthen their capacity to teach out of progressive education. Even Maria Montessori, though she was a woman of tremendous spiritual depth and striving, she did not really provide the teachers with an inner path that would give them the strength and the insight that she had so that they could really continue the Montessori way. Steiner's hope, Steiner's intention, Steiner's will, we might say, was heavily invested in the fact that the teachers who taught in Waldorf schools would also be individuals capable of developing Waldorf further, of evolving it, of transforming it, so that it would not be the same on Tuesday as it had been on Monday. And certainly by Friday, Waldorf education in one school or in somebody's classroom would have gone through yet another change. So he wanted us not just to be passive kind of work people, you know, just working out what Steiner had given us, not just drones, but rather people who are creatively changing the Waldorf school. And he also gave exercises that strengthen us etherically, astrally, out of ego substance, we could say, strengthen us in such a way that we have what it takes to be Waldorf practitioners, to think on our feet, to be poised, to be resilient, to lead lives that are sustainable. All of this lives in the exercises that Steiner gave. But why is it that, you know, even though people may be very grateful to Steiner for all that he gave to Waldorf education, they want to perhaps do the things that are Waldorf, and we speak of Waldorf method, Waldorf inspired, and there are some legal constraints for schools that have to speak that way. But it's that people want to, you know, what could we say? They want to walk the talk, but they don't really want to live in the talk. They don't want to see what lies behind that walk and how that walk got started. And if people are only practicing Waldorf or only doing it as a method, it is not going to go anywhere. It's going to stagnate, and then it's going to start rolling backwards. And we can see this in Montessori education, where very few Montessori practitioners are really scholars of Maria Montessori, really have studied her work, really, you know, have tried to take on the personality and the character of that person, because she didn't really provide a way to do that, and Rudolf Steiner did. So I would just urge you, you know, look at a book like How to Know the Higher Worlds, which is his great source book, not the only place where he brought meditative life, but certainly a very central one. And look at those exercises, and you'll see how many of them really will cultivate qualities that you want to have, that you need to have in the classroom, and will give you a way of strengthening those positive qualities, and also a way of facing the negative qualities that will stand in your way and stand in the children's way as well. And what is so wonderful about Steiner's contemplative and meditative path is that it is very modern. Now, when I say modern, many of you may think, oh my gosh, that's the last thing I'd say about Steiner. His language is so old-fashioned, and, you know, look at how he dressed, and he looks like somebody from, you know, the early 19th century and not like a modern person. Well, all of those appearances aside, if you actually think about Steiner's path, what is remarkable about it is that it does not take a whole lot of time. Well, yes, it does. It takes a whole lifetime on one level, but in terms of any given exercise, on any given day, a few minutes a day will suffice. The important thing is the intensity, it's the striving, it's how much we really put into it. That's what we will, in the end, get out of it. What will we experience? Bright lights, auras around people, levitation? I don't think so. You know, maybe if you're interested in that, Scientology would be a better choice. But what we experience, according to Steiner, you know, he said, well, what are you going to see in yourself that gives you some idea your work, your effort is not in vain? You will walk differently. You will have a greater sense of self-confidence. Just little things like this, but that's not so bad to have a greater sense of self-confidence. That comes in really handy in a parent evening, I'll tell you, or when you're teaching the children a subject that you've been, you know, having to prepare for months because you feel so inadequate in that subject, that you can develop self-confidence, that you can really develop a feeling of being more in yourself, that you can develop a feeling of being on the earth, accepting earthly life, earthly conditions, earthly destiny, and going on in spite of that. What a model it is for your children. So unlike many of the meditative self-development paths that are out there in the marketplace today, Steiner is not about excarnation, though some of the exercises do, in a way, help you breathe out. But the overall effect, the overall work of Steiner, is to help us take hold, and especially to be able to live deeply and yet healthily in the physical world. To be people of our time, not afraid of it, not fleeing it, but to be people who are able to live deeply in it. And there, too, we have a tremendous example, a great model for our children. It is with all of this in mind that I've appended to this conference a few hours worth of excerpts from a course that I've done, an online course on, a downloadable course on Rudolf Steiner called the Steiner Course, in which I go into aspects of Steiner's meditative and contemplative path. And of course, these are your, if you listen to them, they're heard out of the greater context in which I share his life, a lot of other aspects of it. It's, I don't know how long the course is. It's probably even longer than this course, your grade one online conference is. But just for you to get a taste of that, it's supplementary. It's not an official part of this online conference. And if you don't want to listen to it, that's certainly up to you. But if you are interested, you'll get much more information there and much more of a feeling of what's unique, what's challenging, what's difficult, and yet what can be immensely satisfying in Steiner's path. But I would just say that it is almost a sine qua non that anyone serious about being a Waldorf teacher should also be serious about cultivating an inner life. It's totally your choice. It's completely free. You cannot be hired or fired on that basis. But I would just ask you to ponder it, because I think that otherwise Waldorf education, Waldorf teaching will just take far too much out of you. And you need to have some concomitant way of restoring those forces that are constantly going out. On the other hand, however, this does not mean that it is correct for a Waldorf school when the faculty are interviewing someone. And here, for those of you who work at charter schools and have never been in an independent school, you know, you very likely might have just been met by the administrator of the school, maybe the principal of the school and the pedagogical chair of the school. One or two people might have been the ones who met with you, and they hired you, and that was that. In an independent school, it's much more protracted, and you're probably at one point going to meet all of the grade school teachers, another time the whole faculty, another time the College of Teachers. And somewhere along that way, with all of those scores of people meeting you and having the right to question you, you'll probably be asked, what's your feeling about anthroposophy? Or they may even say to you, are you a member of the Anthroposophical Society? And, you know, I always tell people, just say, I'm sorry, it's none of your business, which means you probably won't get hired, but you've certainly asserted your spiritual independence there. Because I hate to say it, but it is none of their business, and they really have no right, legal, spiritual, or other, to ask you that, you know? If they're such highfalutin anthroposophists, they should be able to see that right away and tell immediately if you're an anthroposophist and at what level you are. But somehow it doesn't work out that way. So anyway, that has no business in a school. But on the other hand, one does hope that there is at least a critical number of teachers in a school who are in one way or another, you know, working with Steiner, studying him, and perhaps even trying to get engaged in that path of inner development. So I feel, at least as far as the audio component of this conference goes, this is where I am going to end, pointing outwardly at your class and pointing inwardly and trying to give you some advice or at least some forewarning about the demands of being a Waldorf teacher. I won't have to tell you about the satisfactions. You'll encounter those daily and in profusion, but also to realize that, you know, we're living in difficult times. Earthly life is filled with challenge, and we can't expect it to be any different in the Waldorf setting. So the important thing is, you know, how do we find the strength and where to meet all of that? And I would say, you know, look to the man who got the whole thing rolling, Rudolf Steiner, and you will probably find some degree of help and nourishment there. And my best, warmest wishes to you along the path. Maybe we'll even meet in the flesh instead of just virtually. And thank you very much for taking part in this conference. And I hope that you have found it a good experience. And I hope that it serves the purpose for you as your school year begins and goes on.